Do you know as much about the law as you should? A good way to find out is by joining us for The Law Game. It's an entertainment in which three celebrities are invited to take on the role of judge and pronounce their verdict on fictitious law cases. And joining them on the bench, as usual, is your chairman, Shaw Taylor.
Good evening. Important news today because we've chalked up a century. Yes, this is the 100th edition of The Law Game. For anyone who may have missed the other 99, I will briefly recap on the way the game is played. We have on hand the Radio Drama Company, as always, splendidly sagacious and sartorially slick. They will act out the cases for us until I silence them with this sound. And that is the signal for the panel to come out fighting for points as they tell me who they think won the case and why. Each panel member will start off with 50 points and gamble as many of them as they dare to back their judgment. I will match their bets for a correct decision on which side won and double the odds to 2-1 if they give me near enough the right legal reasons. And the brand new panel gracing us with their presence tonight are Graham Garden, Sally Burton and Trevor McDonald. Graham Garden, an ex-goody. Were you ever a baddie? Did you ever had a brush with the law at all, Graham?
Well, the last time I had a brush with the law, I was actually filming for a television programme, and I was dressed as a lawyer, and we were filming outside the Old Bailey, and I was wearing sort of barrister's gear. We broke at lunchtime, and I went to the pub with the crew, a film crew from Granada, so they were a pretty scruffy-looking lot, you can imagine. And two real barristers came into the pub, and they'd had a few already. I think they'd been celebrating a case. And thought they recognised me and asked what I was doing that afternoon and what case I was on. And I sort of tried to explain to them, and I couldn't get it through to them that I wasn't a real barrister. And they wouldn't sort of stop pestering us. And eventually I said, look, please could you leave us alone? I'm just having a quiet drink with the jury. They retired in horror.
Collapse of stout barrister. Sally Burton, as well as being the wife of the late and sadly Miss Richard Burton, you've carved out your own career as a writer. Have you lived a completely innocent life, or has the arm of the law come into it at all?
Well, I'm afraid I did have one minor brush with the law a couple of years ago. I was travelling back from Los Angeles, and I arrived very early in the morning, and I was feeling pretty tired, and I saw the customs people watching me as I was heaving my luggage off the carousel. I thought, oh, I'd better go through red. So I knew I could remember I'd got some video cassettes with me. I thought, I'd better declare them. And it was very near Christmas, and I also got a whole lot of Christmas gifts with me that had been given to me in America, and I didn't realise that you had to declare these things. So I declared the cassettes, and then they started to go through my luggage and found the Christmas gift and said, well, what's in these? I said, well, I don't know. They're my presents. No, you know, don't ruin my Christmas. Whereupon they sort of started to sort of peel off all the paper. And I said, well, I'm sure they're just little token gifts, a box of handkerchiefs or something. And out fell this sort of glittering little brooch. And so I was immediately pulled up, and they impounded everything. But it taught me a lesson, and I always go through the red channel if I have anything to declare now.
Oh, what a happy Christmas for you. Trevor McDonald, one of our leading TV newsreaders. Now, you report on other people's legal problems, but have you ever had any of your own?
My dog bit somebody once, and this lady, we were quite prepared to settle because we admitted that the dog had done this foul deed, and we were prepared to take a very stern line with the dog, but the lady would have none of it and insisted on going to all, you know, taking the case to the courts. And I turned up the morning of the case, and the man who was representing me said, when the magistrate said, you know, do you plead guilty or not guilty? I was quite prepared to plead guilty. And the man said to me, no, you don't do that. He said, you plead not guilty. So I was in the curious position of sort of pleading not guilty to something which my dog actually did. And I think, in fact, the poor lady who could have got a settlement from us got nothing at all, because there is something in law which talks about a dog being entitled to its first bite or something.
Yes.
And apparently mine was. But
one bite. One bite only. Doesn't apply to human beings. Must tell you now. Right, we've met our panel. Let's have our first encounter with the Radio Drama Company, as they lead us straight into tonight's first case. It came about because a lady had bought a country house with all its contents after its previous owner had gone to live in Africa. She proudly showed all her visitors the trophy room, but got a shock when one of them turned out to be a fervent member of an organisation bent on the preservation of wildlife.
I'm sorry to say, I cannot share your enthusiasm, Mrs. Cheshire. These heads around the walls may be trophies to you, but to me they are what's left of animals that are just as much right to live in peace as you or I.
Oh, of course you're right, Colonel. We're all God's creatures. But we also mustn't forget that these lions, tigers, leopards and cheetahs probably killed other animals themselves.
For food, in order to survive. That's the law of nature, I'm afraid. I eat meat myself, so I can't complain, but what I do object to most strongly is killing for sport. I don't care who does it, royalty or anybody. It's disgustingly immoral.
Well, perhaps they were shot in self-defense, attacking the hunter that shot them.
Then he had no business stalking them in their native habitat in the first place. Wild animals should be left alone, not captured to sell to zoos or shot for their skins or ivory or worst of all, as trophies on walls like these. It makes my blood boil.
Did you know Mr. Carstairs, the man whose house this was?
No, not really. Ah, there's something I never noticed.
Oh, you mean the eagle in the glass case? Mm. I found that in the attic and brought it down just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes. It's a golden eagle.
Yes.
Or rather it was. All too rare these days. Do you mind if I take a closer look?
Oh, by all means. Lift the glass if you like.
Ah. It's a genuine bird, all right. I was hoping, like so many imitations one sees, that it might have been fashioned in plastic.
No, it was stood on a base with the name of the taxidermist.
Oh, not Ben Wetherall.
Yes, that's it. You know him.
Died about 6 years ago, after his shop burnt down. But I must say, he did a good job on this eagle. No sign of a bullet mark anywhere on it. However, that doesn't change the fact that this bird was probably illegally shot. You know, this could land you in all kinds of trouble.
But the bird was already dead and stuffed before I got it. And I didn't even know I had it. I found it in my attic. I can't be guilty.
That would be for a court to decide, not me. I feel it's my duty as a responsible citizen to report the whole matter to the police.
Well, panel, bearing in mind all these cases are based on real cases, Mrs. Chater was charged with possessing a dead golden eagle, contrary to the Wildlife and Countryside Act of 1981. But what did the court decide? Could she have been convicted under the circumstances that you've heard or not? Trevor, what do you think happened to Mrs. Chater? Do you think she was convicted?
I think Mrs. Chater would have been very unlucky to be convicted, but yet I think that she might have been. The law should take a very stern view of people who keep these animals. And if it says you can't shoot them, and you shouldn't, the Wildlife Act or whatever it is, 1981,
right.
Did you say?
That's right.
If that is what it says, then I think that Mrs. Chater should not be harbouring these animals in her house. I think Mrs. Chater got done.
She didn't shoot the eagle. You realise that, of course.
I realise she didn't shoot the eagle, but possessing the eagle is probably as bad as having shot it.
He's a tough one, this McDonald, isn't he? Right. Poor Mrs. Chater. Let me turn to you, Sally Burton. What do you think?
I tend to agree with Trevor. I think that she was in possession of the eagle and was displaying it with some pride, along with all the other animals. I think that she bought the house with its contents, and if she bought the house and found it abhorrent, then she should have got in touch with the Wildlife Association or something. But she clearly was quite enjoying them, so I think she was guilty.
Yeah, she should have realised it was a protected species. Graham Garden, how do you feel about this?
Well, it seems to me, perhaps, that the point is she didn't inherit this golden eagle, she bought it. She bought the house and the contents, and there may be a law governing the buying and selling of stuffed wildlife. And on that point, I would say she probably did get done.
Oh, all three of you go for it. Oh, right. Mm. Now, all three say that Mrs. Chater was found guilty. What points shall we award? Trevor, you've got 50 to start with. How many will you bet?
Well, considering the glee with which she was showing this stuff around, I'm prepared to be very profligate with my points and 10 points.
10 points. You've quite gone off, Mrs. Chatham. You're Sally Burton. You feel the same?
Well, I'll go for 12 points.
Oh, there's a bit of skullduggery going on here. What about you, Graham Garden? You've got 50 points to bet.
Yes. Well, I'll put a tenner on. Yeah.
You will?
I'll put a tenner on there.
Right. All very careful over there. They'll say Mrs. Chater was found guilty. Mrs. Chater was found guilty. In cases under the Wildlife and Countryside Act of 1981, it is assumed the bird or animal was intentionally killed. And it's up to the defendant to prove otherwise on the balance of probabilities. For instance, if she'd been able to show that it was accidentally run over, or struck by lightning, or come into contact with a live electric cable, that would have been sufficient defence. But poor Mrs. Chater didn't know any of those things, so therefore she was found guilty. You all get your points. Sally Burton, you very cleverly bet an extra 2, so it puts you in the lead with 62 points. Well done. Case number 2 coming up. This is set in court. But, of course, it's a law game court where we tend to cut corners on strict legal procedure so we can squeeze 3 cases into the show. Now, this case was brought by an employee to claim damages from his employer under the Offices, Shops and Railway Premises Act of 1963. To learn the actual details of what happened, let's join them in court at the point where the counsel for the defendant is putting questions to her client.
Mr. Bellhurst, you're the owner of a chain of green grocery shops, including the one of which the plaintiff was manager. Was he, in your opinion, a good manager?
First class. Most conscientious staff member I had.
And experienced?
I worked in that shop for 4 years. The last 2 as manager.
How many staff were there at the shop?
4 in all. The manager, Bill Patton, and he had 3 under him. Nicola, Sharon and lad, Tommy. But unfortunately, on this particular day, they were all off with a flu bug.
When did you hear they weren't at work?
That morning, when Bill Patton phoned me to say they were ill. He asked whether he should close up shop for the day.
And what did you tell him?
To open up as usual and do the best he could to cope.
Why didn't you let Mr. Patton close for the one day?
Well, it was a Thursday. Pension day at the post office next door. After they'd collected their money, a lot of the pensioners had stopped by the shop to get their weekly supply of fruit and vegetables. Yeah, they liked doing both jobs in one journey.
And you really thought Mr. Patton could manage the shop on his own? Despite the fact that you knew he suffered with a weak back and had previously made it known to you that he was under doctor's orders not to lift anything heavy.
Yeah. I told him, if anything heavy needed lifting, he should get a customer to help him.
Thank you, Mr. Bellhurst. I've no more questions. But, my lord, if I may, I'd like to recall the plaintiff to the stand.
Very well. Mr. Patton, would you please return to the witness box? And I must remind you that you are still under oath.
Thank you, my lord. Mr. Patton, do you recall in your phone call to Mr. Bellhurst his instructing you to do the best you could and not to attempt to lift anything heavy without assistance from a customer?
Yes, he said both those things. But what he should have said is close the shop up for the day, except that he would have lost a few quid over it.
You mean you would have preferred to have been paid to have the day off?
No, what I'm saying is that if it normally takes 4 to run a shop, it's hardly fair expecting one man to do that work on his own.
That's why Mr. Bellhurst specifically told you to recruit help if, for example, you needed to lift anything.
From who? He said himself that most of the customers on Thursday, the ones he wanted the shop kept open for, were old-age pensioners. And most of them were women. Would you ask an old-age pensioner to lift a heavy box for you?
But you were, on your own admission, under instructions not to do it yourself. You disobeyed that instruction and cannot honestly claim that the resultant slip disc you suffered was anyone's fault but your very own.
What a picture it conjures up, doesn't it? A shop full of old-age pensioners staggering around with great boxes of goodies. Well now, Mr. Patton claimed damages under the Offices and Shops and Railway Premises Act of 1963, which states that no employee shall be required to lift a load so heavy as to be likely to cause him injury. So, what happened, Sally Burton?
I don't think he won the case, no. I think he lost.
Well, because Mr. Bellhurst has said to him, don't lift anything heavy.
That's right, and I think that he should have just explained to all those pensioners who were coming in anxious to spend their money. No, it can't be done. Awfully sorry.
Right. All right. So you think he lost. Graham yes, Garden, what do you think?
Well, I think Mr. Bellhurst was a mean old so-and-so.
Yes.
And was very tough on Bill Patton, leaving him all on his own with an unrealistic instruction to recruit help without providing any means for him to do so. However, seems to me it depends on how you define the word required in the law. And if Mr. Bellhurst specifically told him, and Mr. Patton seemed to accept he was told, not to lift things, then I can't see that he was therefore required to lift things. And so, strictly speaking, I suppose Mr. Patton would lose the case.
You're quite sad about that, really, aren't you?
I'm very sad. I rather like Mr. Patton.
All right.
He'd have gone on well with Ben Weatherall, the taxidermist.
Trevor McDonough, what do you think about poor old Patton there? Do you think he lost his claim?
I think Mr. Patton should have won his claim. I hope he did. Because I don't think it's enough to say that the man who is working in the shop, Mr. Patton, should make his own judgment. If he's placed in the situation where it is conceivable that he might have to do something without the help necessary, then I think that responsibility devolves on the shopkeeper, the shop owner.
Right, Trevor, you say that Mr. Patton won. Graham Garden and Sally Burton together say that he lost. So let's go first of all to Sally. 62 points. You are in the lead, Sally, so you can bet as many as you like.
All right, I'll bet 15.
Will you now?
Oh.
Cool, yeah. Mm. Really going
this
for
is
it.
Serious.
Yes. Graham Garden, you have 60 points to bet with. What will you bet that you are right that he lost?
Ah, then. 17 behind Sally, so if she's right and I'm right, I'll bet a bet 16 points in that case, hadn't I?
Are you? All right, 16 you're going to bet. Trevor McDonald, you're the odd man out. You have 60 points to bet.
So it doesn't really matter, really, does it? I mean, I...
Well, you could go one way or the other.
Go one way or the other.
Say, yes.
15 points.
15, that's what I like to hear, a bold man. Well, you say that Mr. Patton won his case. Trevor, I've got bad news for you. He lost his claim for damages.
Oh.
The court held
unfair,
he could not
unfair.
Be
it's
awarded
what I thought
damages.
About the law.
You what?
I always had suspicions about the law, you see.
Yes, you...
Not fair.
Back to your dog again. Mr. Patton lost his claim for damages. The court held he could not be awarded damages since he had not been, the word that Graham used, required to lift the box in the sense of being left with no adequate alternative. He could have left the boxes where they were until someone suitable was available to help him. So, Graham, I'm going to double up your points because you latched onto the being required to lift. What does require mean in law? Which means that you go up to 92 points, double your 16 up. Sally Burton, you are second with 77. Trevor, you have dropped to 45, but all is not lost. Right, third and final case tonight coming up. It involves a van driver who operated a laundry service, or rather, acted as a middleman for a laundry. Now, one morning, on his routine drive, he was stopped by a motorcycle policeman.
Something wrong, officer?
Yes. I notice you're not wearing a seatbelt.
Oh, I don't need to. This is a delivery van, specially constructed for making deliveries.
Do you hold an exemption certificate permitting you to drive this vehicle? We're not wearing a seatbelt?
No, I was told I didn't need one. I'm automatically exempt because I'm using the van as part of my rounds, delivering laundry.
Oh, I see, sir. And just where is this laundry you say you're delivering? The van appears to be empty.
Oh, it is at the moment. That's because I'm on my way to collect it. I'll pick it up every morning from Fordham Street. Come with me and see for yourself if you like.
No, I'm quite prepared to believe you, sir. Having picked it up, what do you do with it then?
Well, I'll take it back to my place, sort it out into 16 bundles, which I'll then deliver to the 16 restaurants that make up me round.
You say you take the laundry back to your place. Where is that?
My house.
Your house?
Yeah, I use it as my office. It's my registered office, so there's nothing wrong there. It's all kosher and above board.
That may well be, sir, but you haven't answered my question. Where is your house?
Selborne Crescent. It's about a mile back down the road.
Yes, I do know where Selborne Crescent is. And you say you make this journey every day?
Yeah.
In this van?
That's right.
Without wearing your seatbelt?
I don't have to.
You're sure of that, are you, sir?
Yeah, I read the regulations.
Are you referring to the motor vehicle's wearing of seatbelts regulations of 1982?
That's right. It says that seatbelts need not be worn by drivers of a delivery like this on its local rounds or collections. That's just what I'm doing. Or was doing before you stopped me.
You're quite right about that section of the regulations, but my interpretation of them seems to differ from yours. I don't see travelling a mile and a half back and forth from your home to the laundry as being part of your rounds.
Obviously it's part of my rounds. It's where it starts. I can't deliver laundry that I haven't first collected. And that exemption clause includes the word collections.
That's a small step from John Warner to Jack Warner, isn't it? Now, that van driver's argument only made the policeman dig his heels in much farther. He wasn't going to be swayed by anything the man said. The man was charged with contravening those motor vehicles wearing of seat belts regulations of 1982. But was he convicted, Graham Garden?
Oh, now then, let's get this straight. He was going to pick up the laundry and then take it back to his house, which was where he had his office, and That's then right. from there take it to Started. Deliver it to the customers.
Yep.
Right. It's down to these one-word definitions again. I think it depends what collected or collection means. Does it mean it only applies if it's being collected from or delivered to a customer, or that it's being collected from some central depot and then delivered to a customer? I think probably if he had been going straight from the laundry to the customers, he could have done without his seatbelt. But because he took the laundry somewhere in between, namely home, his office, that was neither a collection nor a delivery in the eyes of the law, and he would therefore be done.
Oh, he thinks it all out, doesn't he? That yard, he really does. He's right, you think he was done. Let me turn to you, Trevor MacDonald. Do you think they made the charge stick?
Yes, I think he was probably done, and for very much the same... You worry about my points, aren't you? Is it the case that he was, at the time when he was stopped, he had no laundry with him, is that right?
Yeah.
And was he going towards his house or away from his house?
He was going away from his house.
He was going away from his house. So he was going to collect the laundry.
That's it, he was going to collect the laundry. He was on his way from his house to collect the laundry.
I think it's probably stretching the exemption a little too far to say that when you go to collect it, you are still covered by the law which says that you're exempt if you have your laundry. Because, I mean, he could probably then argue that since this is the van which he normally uses for this, if he's going out in the evening to a restaurant because he delivers laundry along the same road and collects it and so on, I mean, he could probably take this to quite a sort of illogical conclusion. So I would have thought, perhaps again a little unfairly for him, but in the strictest interpretation of the law, I would have thought that he might be done.
Yeah. You mean he could go on holiday as long as he took his own laundry?
Absolutely.
So you think he's done
without seatbelts.
An unseat-belted laundry delivery driver, Sally Burton. What do you think? Two lads both think he was done.
Yes, I'm afraid I'm going to be rather gloomy as well. I think it all seems to me to hinge on this sort of collection thing. I mean, collection as in picking up and having some laundry in the back of the truck, that's one thing. But he had no laundry there. He was on his way to pick it up. So I'm afraid, I think, that the poor man was done.
All three magistrates feel the same about this, do they? Right. Now, this is very interesting because it's now a question of points, isn't it? As you are all either going to win or lose, you've got to work out very rapidly how many points you should put on to either win or lose. Graham Garden, you're in the lead. You've got 92 points. Sally Burton, you've got 77. Trevor MacDonald, you've only got 45.
I have no
chance. But things could change. Well, I don't know. Graham Garden, how many of your 92 are you going to bet?
Well, 78.
78. Right. All right. Trevor MacDonald, you have 45. What are you going to bet?
Has anybody ever finished with none at all? Or sort of...
It has been
minus 20 or something.
It has been known. People have gone right down the pan with minus scores.
43.
43. Right, Sally Burton, you have 77. What are you going to bet?
Yeah, I'm going to go right near the edge. I'm going to bet 76.
Are you? You don't make life easy for me trying to add it all up, do you? But we won't go through all of that. Right, you all say that the charge stuck. The charge stuck. The driver was found guilty. The whole thing hinged on that word rounds. That's the important word. Clearly he was on his rounds when delivering to the 16 restaurants. And the law acknowledges it to be impractical to keep fastening and unfastening one's seatbelt in those circumstances. But the judge said that the daily uninterrupted 1.5 mile drive to and from the laundry did not constitute a round in itself. So the driver on that journey was not exempt from the compulsory wearing of the seatbelt. How much he was fined, I don't know. That's not in the story. Let's look at the marks instead. Let us say that Trevor McDonald, you have 88. You did very well then, didn't you? Sally Burton, I've decided you have 153. And Graham Garden, you have 170. You are this week's winner. Well done. No more cases tonight, but just a hint of one we shall be dealing with next time. It concerns the owners of the big wheel ride at a fairground who claimed they did not need to pay VAT because, like buses and trains, they were transporting members of the public. The Customs and Excise Commissioners sued them for VAT. Who was right, the fairground people or the customs men? Now think about that and then tune in next week and see if you were right. Until then, let me say good night on behalf of tonight's panel of Graham Garden, Sally Burton and Trevor McDonald, the Radio Drama Company, who are Ian Target, Belinda Walker and John Warner, deviser and writer Brad Ashton, legal advisor Doug Cracknell, producer Sean Ed William, and finally from me too, Shaw Taylor. Bye-bye for now.